Hey guys, it's Porter. I just wanted to give you guys a little bit of context for what is happening in this episode. We had our first guest on, Joe, aka Julius Irvington from Twitter.com, and he's a super, super funny guy. We're very appreciative that he came on, but we had some technical difficulties trying to record it over Google Hangout. So at times his audio kind of gives out a little bit, and then also Matt's audio might be a little bit lower because we were pretty much sharing a mic. We were literally sharing a mic throughout the episode. So whenever you can't hear him, just, you know, try to turn it up a little bit and keep that in mind. But we think it was really funny and good episode, so enjoy.
I'm recording here from Saddam's bunker.
We'll be able to post it.
It's still furnished and everything, so I don't think the SEALs did a very good job cleaning it out or anything. They just grabbed them.
All right, so for those of you who don't know who Joe is Twitter user Julius Irvington. So we are obviously having another white guy on the hip hop podcast, but at least he's named after a black guy.
Yes,
I think that's progress.
Yeah, he's like if Dr. J grew up rowing crew.
Exactly. I think that's a really good comparison. Would you say that's fair, Joe?
I didn't row crew. I actually can't swim, so I think that helps.
That's good. You're in a boat.
I'm really pulling for Joe's candidate tonight. If you guys can't see this right now because it's a podcast, but Joe is actually wearing his Roy Moore for Senate hat right now. So I'm pulling for your guy.
And for all the listeners, me and Porter are sharing a mic tonight, so the amount of accidental kisses will be plentiful.
Absolutely. That will be for our own pleasure, because they will not be able to see.
Yeah.
They're not part of it.
But no, yeah, I'm wearing my Roy Moores and Taboos t-shirt and my, you know, Senator Roy Moore hat here. It's a fitted, unlike the MAGAs, which are adjustable.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I mean, I own several pairs of MAGA hats, a lot of just different MAGA clothes. I'm really excited for tonight. I'm hoping that
we talk about rap at some point.
No, well, I was going to relate this to rap, actually, because, you know, Roy Moore being, a member of the Moore family, his brother Macklemore will be brought up multiple times. In all seriousness, no, we hope Roy Moore dies in a fire.
Surprisingly enough, Macklemore has disowned his uncle, Roy Moore.
Yeah, I would not be surprised. Macklemore is he's a pretty woke fella. So, woke.
So yeah, in the third grade, I thought I was a pedophile. I was fourteen-year-old girls, and my uncle was too.
Oh my god. Oh jeez, you know.
This is
holy shit. All right.
Steadily losing viewers.
we were actually just discussing another person who we think would do a better job at senator than Roy Moore would be other resident of Alabama, 2 Chainz. Mm-hmm. Actually, fun fact, Titty Boy he's not from Alabama, but he played basketball at Alabama mm-hmm. State, which is the only other college in the whole state other than Alabama. So it's pretty legit.
Yeah, young senator getting head while the engine running. that's just...
My favorite 2 Chainz lyric is the one on Travis Scott's Rodeo where he talks about drinking milk. What is he? Would drink breast milk out of lean cups or something. But yeah, So Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably edit a bunch of this out because we're terrible people.
Yeah.
But moving on from the world ending and us all possibly having to flee the country, is
tonight is going to be the first and probably last edition, because we probably won't be doing this for another year.
We'll probably be absolutely shocked.
Yeah, we'll probably got another, you know, good 2 or 3 weeks in us. I know, this is the 10th episode. We bring it up every episode because that's what people love, is to hear how many episodes we've had.
We're really forced to.
Point. Yeah, so we wanted to have Joe on because Joe loves Metro Boomin, and is that it? I don't know. What else did you want to talk about? Young Dro?
This is going to be a really short
one. Oh, yeah. No, Young Dro is – well, there was someone talking about on Twitter about, like, what was the first album you bought? And, like, everyone, I think, first of all, was lying, because they were, like, saying, like, The Chronic and...
Nevermind by Nirvana.
That's a classic album. And so the first album I bought was Young Jack City, New Jack City, which Young Jock's album.
Was it New Jock City? Was that the one with...
I'm so happy that he's also... I believe close to the same age. I was very pro Young Jock.
Yeah.
In seventh and eighth.
What was his first hit? The one
that's going down.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And then he had a spin-off of that, which also was a hit. Stunned as a Habit, which was like 4 years later, by the way.
Was that him? Stunned as a Habit?
Yeah. And it was from It's Going Down. He has the line.
He just took
Stunned as a Habit.
He just took a bar of that song and made it the chorus of a new song
like 4 years later. That was the weird part about it.
Yeah.
And then that also was a hit.
No, but I love Dirty South rap from that era. One thing I did want to talk about, Young Dro and the movie Lean On Me, because he has the line, he's like, love watching Lean On Me, which I've always really enjoyed, because he doesn't just love the movie. He loves the act of watching Lean On Me.
It's not supposed to be a play on words, like lean, like
he literally just likes to lean.
Wait, what is the movie Lean On Me? I know the song Lean On Me, but what is the movie Lean On Me?
Yeah.
Joe, you want to explain that one?
It's some like, I may be thinking of Stand By Me.
Yeah. I was like, wait a minute. Are you confusing Lean On Me and Stand By Me?
The sequel that was made like 30 years after Stand By Me came out.
Right, it's
Corey Feldman, and he's just like on heroin the entire time.
Like most of his life.
Yeah, it's
very similar to
it's,
him.
Lean On Me. The Stand By Me is like now less stable. They are using some sort of walking stick.
They just grabbed clips of River Phoenix from Stand By Me. Use the same clip throughout the movie.
Yeah, I'm just
because he's dead.
I just love that one of Joe's main talking points on this podcast, he realized while he was explaining it that it's actually a different movie altogether. Oh my god. All right, so yeah, like I said, tonight we will talk about more than just Macklemore and Young Dro and Young Jock. By the way, great era of music. Yeah, some real classics in there.
I would like to do another episode where we only talk about Young Dro and Young Jock.
I think we could have a spin-off episode just like Young Jock did with Stunned as a Habit. Yeah. We'll bring up Eminem again, which the fans just love. That's like our version of Freebird. They just yell Eminem at us, and then we come out and shit on him.
We're so like desperately boxed.
No, this was the year. This was the year Eminem kind of reclaimed his throne, because in all seriousness, I did want to talk about how like this year's kind of seemed like there's a bit of a vacuum at the top of rap right now. Like I feel like. Where like Drake kind of owned maybe last year and the year before.
Yeah.
As far as in like pop culture. I feel like this year is like, well, is it Kendrick? Is it Drake? I feel like Vince Staples, while his album was great, the mainstream level, then like he's definitely more in a hip hop head sort of hipster us type of crowd.
Yeah, that's actually what I was thinking about, because one of the things that we'll discuss tonight is we're going to do the concept of this episode is we're going to have like end of year NBA type awards. So we'll have different categories for different rappers. And then also we're going to go based on the polls that we posted on Twitter earlier. And it was an interesting year in that it felt like a year that was dominated by singles and not necessarily albums. So does someone like a Kendrick really stand out? Because a lot of people thought that he had the best album. And that was something that when we came up with these, like, we love Vince Staples, as Joe does, we do, Matt does. But we also think it would be a disservice to the listeners who either might not like Vince Staples or really know him, because he isn't all that popular.
I mean, like, I think you could argue Summertime of Six might have been more popular than this album.
This album sold better.
But I think so.
I really, like, I feel like when Summertime of, and this isn't, like, based off sales, I really feel like, just in general, like, with people I talk to and, like, just, like, my friends that aren't as big of hip-hop heads, like, I feel like I remember them talking more about Summertime of Six. And maybe it was because it was his first, like, successful album, and it was kind of like, other than, you know, like, he had like mixtapes, and like he also had that feature on, what was that,
Hive,
yeah, which was like a really good feature. Like, I feel like it was like kind of almost a shock factor, like, whoa, this guy's fucking awesome. And I personally like this album more. I think it's a lot more mature, but I don't, I mean, I obviously I'm probably wrong because it sold better. But like,
no, but I also think that might be reflective of the fact that Vince had some years to like reap the benefits of Summertime 06.
Yeah,
and absolutely. Then had the ability, he dropped Prima Donna last year, which helped continue his buzz. And then, you know, this album was the first album that he released when he actually had somewhat of a name for himself. So Summertime 06, he still didn't really have that much of a name for himself. No. Outside of the Earl features, you didn't really know who Vince Staples was. Summertime 06 put him on the map, past just, you know, us, the hipstery hip-hop heads who, you know, listen to hip-hop. Yeah. But that was, you know, like, this tonight, once again, it's not gonna, it's just like the Grammys episode. It's not necessarily going to be our favorite musicians or the people we think, like, I think Vince had a great year. I think there are plenty of rappers and producers that had great years that aren't going to be left, that aren't going to be put into tonight just because they didn't have the cultural impact and success that some other rappers might have had. So that's kind of how I viewed this one. Like, it's kind of half skill, half popularity.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's kind of like, Vince is almost like, just like, since we're doing this like in an NBA award format, he's like a little bit like Nikola Jokic or someone who's very, very like,
yeah, I know who that is,
right? Exactly. So like, to all of our fans,
yeah, you guys know. the Serb Ian guy,
good at scoring baskets.
The Slavic gentleman. Vince is kind of Eastern European of rap.
I just went way too backpacky with my NBA knowledge.
Yeah. So the first category we are going to go over tonight is the best producer of 2017. Now, this is a poll that I posted on Twitter earlier. And so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to read down the people that are in the category, and then we will say who we think should win, and then I'll say the poll from Twitter. Obviously, I think since the fans, quote unquote, you know, my 100 people that listen to like every other episode of this podcast voted, and just people that follow us on Twitter, I think we might be able to give them a little bit more weight to their vote. So let's say we have a split vote. The winner will be whoever the fans agreed with. So if Joe disagrees with me and you, but Joe agrees with the fans, then the fans win. So yeah, exactly. So which producer had the best 2017? Metro Boomin, TM88, Mike Will Made It, and No ID. I could just run down real quick, like, basically what they did. Metro Boomin, I mean, kind of goes without saying, right? I mean, had Bad and Bougie for the year, arguably. He's produced multiple albums and mixtapes this year with Offset and Nav and Big Sean, the most recent. TM88 produced Lil Uzi Vert, EXO Tour Life. Mike Will Made It produced a lot on Kendrick's, and also produced the Ray Schremmerk. I literally have. Do you know how to say that, Joe?
Ray Schremmerk. It's drummer's ear backwards.
Ray Schremmerk?
Yeah. And what, Ray Schremmerk?
Race Kramer.
Race Kramer. It's Race Kramer. It's Yiddish.
Raymond Kramer.
Race Kramer.
It's actually, it is Eardrummers backwards, which is Mike Will's label, but it's still incredibly confusing. And I always just say the guys who did Black Beatles.
Yeah, well, it's easier to just say Slim Jimmy and Sway Lee.
Good point.
If we're just,
Or the Unlock the Swag voice. And then the last one on here is No ID.
Forever Teens. No ID did Logic's album this year, right?
He produced some of Logic's album, and he also produced all of Jay-Z's album. Joe's falling asleep.
I guess good for him. It's probably
summer video where they go to 7-Eleven.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The best video of all time.
Yeah, where they're stoned.
11-7.
So. First off, Joe, we're...
Yeah, Rex Schremer was on Mixmag this week, and they, like, jokingly said they were going to make... they're going to move to techno next, and they're obviously joking, but Mixmag was like, hey, someone said techno. So they're like, oh, we got to write a full story about it.
Some days, I actually would love to hear Ray Schrammert, techno album. okay, so, Joe, who do you think is the producer of the year? I have a hunch who it's going to be, but who do you think?
Yeah, I got to go with Metro just because of his output and sort of, he's who, the whole, like, scene goes to now. Like, I mean, there's, you know, makes some stuff. There's Lex Luger, like, disappeared, right?
Yeah,
but yeah. So I mean, yeah, he's the name on it. He's, you know, Young Metro, don't trust you, I'm gonna shoot you.
So in order to not get shot, we're all gonna vote for Metro Boomin tonight.
Yeah.
We don't want to get killed by Future.
That's his next drop. If you don't
headshot somebody like three episodes ago.
Oh, let's not get into that. I accidentally said that Yo Gotti. No, I accidentally said who is the Mano. I accidentally accused Mano of shooting and trying to kill Young Dolph.
So
was
for personal reasons.
It was actually Yo Gotti who one of his affiliates tried to kill Young Dolph. Yeah. As you know,
on two people.
Joe's a huge fan of Adolph, so
I love Adolph.
So yeah, I think Metro Boomin, for me personally, that's definitely the producer of the year. I think between Bad and Bougie, he also produced what else? Ric Flair Drip on the
which is more recent, but that was a really big song. It's on the whose album is that specific?
That was on Offset, 21 Savage, and Metro Boomin. Mm-hmm. So the output is definitely part of the reason, but we do have to talk about. Why did he make an album with Nav, who sounds like a robot, and he sounds like a pre-programmed rap robot? So he made an album with Nav, and I don't know if you heard the Big Sean album, but it's not
pretty great.
I didn't listen to that, but I do think that Nav has like some compromising pictures of Drake or something. And so Drake. Just kind of putting his dick around, making people produce this guy's album for fear of blackmail.
I think Nav might have photos of everyone in that circle. The Weeknd, Drake, because the Weeknd signed Nav for some reason. And then Metro Boomin made an album with him. So, I mean, at least with Big Sean, you could argue, you know, Big Sean is one of the biggest rappers in the world. He actually had a top five selling album this year with I Decided before the Metro Boomin project. But he also did have a line on the new album that was "Pussy so good, I don't want to fuck you in the ass."
The new album also had that.
It was, I think, the concept, like, the concept of the song. He smoked weed with Rosa Parks
and like had wielded guns with Rosa Parks.
Okay, that's like more not like that's more like Big Sean's doing a character on a podcast or something. the civil rights stoner activist who also like loves butt sex. I guess I don't know. Chop it some more.
What it's like that old Twitter bit with the guy that was like, what if Homer Simpson smoked weed? And then he made a whole novel. What if Rosa Parks smoked weed?
Or like the Wardell, what if the Pope blasted six thing? What if the Pope blasted six, huh?
What if the Pope? What if, yeah, what if Rosa Parks?
What if Rosa Parks
blasted Jays?
Blasted Jays.
So yeah, other than I think because of the amount of hits and just production that came out this year for Metro Boomin, also the he kind of makes me feel like a failure because I think he's like 3 years younger than me. Yeah. And he's been killing it for like 5 years now. But yeah, that the fans on Twitter also the people who follow me on Twitter, we don't have fans. They also voted for Metro Boomin by a wide margin. I think right now he has the name recognition. Also has the hits, and he put out a ton of shit this year.
And this kind of comes down to, and like I was speaking to you prior to the podcast, like quantity over just like major single success. And like he really has it both, but like specifically with Bad and Bougie, that like out of any of the songs that these guys produced, like even more so than Humble, it just reached the widest demographic of people and became like a cultural phenomenon.
Absolutely. Culture. Yeah, culture. There you go.
Yeah,
so there you go.
Also,
you want to ruin it, Joe?
Let's see. Also, I was just gonna say that you know, the way that people consume music now, almost I feel like Metro's whole like sort of spray and pray format, which like not to, he is a good producer.
Don't slut shame Metro Boomin.
You know, you put out all like
five
all this amount, yeah, this amount of songs, and I like, you know, not to unequivocally call every rapper he works with good, but this like level of talent, and you're gonna have just like, you know, 5, 10, however many of your songs consistently in the like radio DJ's rotations.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of that is branding too, dude. Yeah. The Metro Boomin tag.
Yeah, that's
like
what I was gonna say. He also has the best intro tag of the four, in my opinion.
He's the only. Oh. I mean,
Mike Will Made It.
Yeah, like he's the only other one that even has a tag.
It's like, yeah, Mike Will Made It's his basically.
If you don't have a tag, don't even make beats.
It's
but
like
actually,
the Maybach music one.
Funny story. You know the Kanye song where he talks about bleached assholes?
Yeah. Yes. Vaguely, but yeah.
Father Shaking My Head Part One. No, he actually Metro Boomin's tags on there, and apparently Metro Boomin only made like a small loop on there. That's like Mike Dean and Kanye made that beat, but because he's Metro Boomin, Kanye just put the tag because he like tweaked something. Even Metro Boomin was like, I don't know why he put that on there, but I was
smart,
grateful for
smart
it.
Man.
So yeah, that's okay.
That's sort of similar to how Benny Blanco basically co-produced Cashmere Cat, but like people only know like who most people don't know who Benny Blanco is. I feel like
I know who he is, but yeah, I'm also way into music. Like I'm pretty pretty deep,
pretty
dude. I'm pretty hipster, man. But no, I mean, I think that happens a lot actually in hip hop, especially like Mike Dean makes half of Kanye's beats now, and Kanye just like tweaks them. I mean, he works with them with a few different people,
yeah.
But like Mike Dean doesn't give a shit because he's like, I'm making a fuck ton of money and I'm producing it pretty much. And then I'm on a Kanye West album. Like, he's been doing it with him since graduation.
Well, Kanye does, like, at this point, I mean, like, and obviously that's, like, he's an incredible producer, but, like, he's reached the point where, like, he just has people over to his house and they just, like, get on his boards and, like, no, seriously, though. Like, he has guys like Tyler, the Creator, and, like, he pulls from so many different people, whether, like, he's using their beats or, like, he, like, gets something from them stylistically.
He's sort of like in the position where he's a EP slash like he's almost his own production studio.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's Dr. Dre does something similar too.
Yeah. So, fuck, what were we even talking about? this is nice.
Young Doc.
Bleached assholes.
right. Yeah. Yeah. So,
Metro Boomin. Unanimous.
You need something platable and platable on the. Not pronunciation guy, but you need something like bleached assholes to tag things with.
Yeah, that was actually going to be the name was bleached assholes. We were both going to bleach our hair like Eminem in 1999, and we were just going to call it bleached assholes. But then we decided to go in a different direction. Yeah. So moving on.
Uh-huh.
Good segue.
Very, very good segue.
So, as we know, Metro Boomin unanimously won Best Producer there. I think that he hands down had that one.
Yeah, he had one of the most,
The next thing we're going to do, so Producer of the Year is kind of like Coach of the Year, I think. You know, a little bit behind the scenes, but also, you know, orchestrating things. So
it's
that's
the Hinkie Award.
That's the Producer of the Year. That would be like, Interscope, like Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre or some shit.
I just wanted to say.
It's like Coach of the Year where it has like a better chance to be a white guy.
Moving on, children. So the next category is going to be like the comeback player of the year.
Hell yeah.
But it's going to be for rappers because this is a hippie hop podcast. Mm-hmm. And sure. So next one is which rapper had the best comeback of 17. So who was the best comeback? Pretty much is what I'm trying to say here. So first
words, folks. Words.
I feel like I'm on drugs. Jesus Christ. All right. All right. So the first might be someone that you're familiar with, Mr. 300 himself, Chief Keef Cozart, Chief Keef, who kind of was off the radar for a few years. I mean, he was still dropping tapes, but I think this year with Thoughtbreaker and his other album, he had much more in terms of critical success and commercial success. And then Jay-Z obviously took 4 years off, you know, came back with the album Title Exclusive. And so he didn't even sell that album, by the way. He's kind of copping off Chance's style. He wasn't on the charts at all. I guess when you're Jay-Z and you have the most money out of anyone in the world, why do you even really need to sell your album?
Also, yeah, like that was, I believe that was exclusively on Tidal for the first week.
Yeah. And now it's just on Apple Music. It's still not on Spotify.
I did not download Tidal.
Us poors over at Spotify do not have the Jay-Z album. So, and then the next person, Tyler, the Creator, took 2 years off between Cherry Bomb and Flower Boy. He really, in my opinion, stepped it up for this album. I think a lot of people think that this is his best album altogether. And then lastly, Joey Badass, because we couldn't think of anyone else.
Well, Eminem had I think he's the comeback rapper of the year because he keeps coming back up on this podcast. So I think that was
Eminem. So Joe's writing in Eminem.
Yeah.
He woke us all up with the awfully hot coffee pot. Joe, once again, since you're the guest, you can go, I guess, whatever.
Okay. No, I want to say Chief Keef because he has just sort of special place in my heart as the oldest looking, however old he is, of anyone.
I think he's still like 19.
He's sort of in that Ray Shremmerd crowd where he's forever a teen. But I would have to say, I know it's the popular, easy answer. I sort of feel like because he had a better starting point, but I feel like Tyler, the Creator, is definitely my vote for this year.
Okay, yeah, I think what we were trying to say before with Jay-Z was, like, considering that it is Jay-Z, this album was good. I thought it was better than his last album. It didn't have nearly as many hits or as much cultural relevance. I feel like I never hear any of the songs anywhere, regardless of whether I'm hanging out with hip-hop heads, you know, people listening to the radio, whatever it is. It really didn't have make its mark like his last album did, regardless of the quality of the music. So I really can't vote him.
Right.
Love Keef, huge Sosa fan, but I don't think he'll ever have the year like he did in 2011, 2012 when he first bursted onto the scene. And he kind of created this whole like new generation of like mumble drill rap. Yeah. And, so my vote also goes for Tyler, the Creator, because who cares about Joey Badass?
Chief Keef, at this point, it's like hard to remember, but like Chance also became popular at the same time. And like Chief Keef was absolutely bigger than Chance at that point in their careers, I would say.
Oh, definitely.
Like, and it's weird, like, now to say that, considering, like, Chance is, like, you know, almost a religious icon. Name. Yeah.
And, Chance, inventor of Christianity.
Yeah. So, no, but I mean, like, I also agree. I think Tyler, the Creator, I remember the first single that came out was Who Dat Boy, and, like, I was, like, blown away. Like, because I've always liked Tyler to like an extent. Like it was always like oh yeah, this is cool, like oh, that was shocking what he just said,
yeah,
like type of thing, like oh, he's on Adult Swim, that's funny. But like this is the first time I've taken him seriously as an artist, and like I think that he like specifically like honed in on that, like he you know, he like encircles himself with like very successful artists such as like A$AP Rocky and Kanye, and it shows on the project, specifically with the singles. It was like, I think the project, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, like it was slightly a bummer, like just because like how good the singles were. It was never, I guess it was, you know, in hindsight, it was never going to live up to the individual songs, you know, on the app. Like,
right.
You know what I mean?
Well, my thing, actually, now that you mentioned it with the Chief Keef and Chance dichotomy, I think what happens is that Chance took a more unique route. And so like, the drill trap rap scene kind of got clogged up with honestly people who were doing Keef better than Chief Keef was.
Right.
And in a more also like maybe marketable way too. Like I think 21 Savage is frankly an improvement on that, and a more like maybe melodic type of that. And then especially Migos
definitely, took it to like, catering to more of that.
Took it to, mm-hmm. Yeah. They took it to honestly they took it to a level that people could digest more, that they were less scared of, frankly.
Yeah, I mean they were less scared. Yeah, I mean Sosa was pretty intimidating, I'm not gonna lie.
You understand the words they're rapping, which is always good.
And also I think when it comes to the whole Chance, Chief Keef showing kind of the two sides of Chicago, that's kind of like the dichotomy there. And Chance has referenced it multiple times on albums, talking about how he's kind of like the antithesis of a Chief Keef. But also, it's a little bit easier to, you know, have commercial success when you're doing Kit Kat commercials and you're singing.
One step in the back.
And you're so annoying. And you're singing ABC. He literally on DJ Khaled's album sings the ABCs to his daughter.
Song.
I mean, so really, from a commercial standpoint, I never think that Chief Keef will ever get back to it because of the shock and awe factor that, you know, came with the whole movement.
And Chief Keef's never going to be popular to 6-year olds. Like
Mom, I want to be in 300. Yeah.
I just love Sosa, Mom.
Will you give me some Molly water for Christmas?
I hate being sober, Mom.
Oh, So I'm really glad that so far we have a guest on and we also have polls and we're still all agreeing. There's a lot of diversity of opinion on this podcast.
This is great.
All right, so we should move on to the next one. Which rapper was the rookie of the year? So as you know, you can just compare this to the NBA rookie of the year. First one is Brockhampton, the like super rap group boy band out of Los Angeles. Second one, Cardi B. So Money Moves and shit, you know. Yeah. Married to Offset. Playboi Carti, who had a breakthrough hit with Magnolia. I never realized brother how popular Cardi B's half-brother.
Yeah. Yeah,
I never realized how popular. French, he's, like, super big.
Yeah, it's the French spelling of Carti.
Playboi Carti.
Magnolia. And then the last one being Lil Pump. Oh, before we go on to discuss this, you guys want to hear something fucking ridiculous?
Yes.
Lil Pump always was in the year 2000.
Get the fuck out of here.
Lil Pump was one when 9/11 happened.
Oh, man.
Hmm.
That's a little too close. That's a little suspicious how close those dates are together. Lil Pump's.
What is Lil Pump?
I mean, it makes you think, right?
Lil Jet Fuel Pump.
All I'm saying is there were zero 9/11s before Lil Pump was born, and there was one after. So,
all right, so let's talk about the artists.
All right, so Joe, you can go first because I'm still kind of up in the air on this one. I don't know about what you think, but
oh no, I was definitely split too. I think if I'm just going like name recognition, like the biggest singles, I think to be my vote, but I really, really want to say Lil Pump just because.
Gucci Gang.
I love that album. Yeah, Gucci Gang, Boss, Molly. Like, I don't know.
Relatable.
He's just like, we got single or like alliterative titles on the songs. Again, we're talking about being marketable to 6-year-olds. And so... I think in the Chance the Rapper vein, he has that going on. His colorful hair, which I think children like. No,
kind of looks like a Muppet.
No, but I don't know. He's the rapper who like made me have the most fun listening to hip hop this year for sure.
Okay.
That's interesting. Matt, who is your
Yeah, so I was also torn, and like, so it really comes down to deciphering what rookie of the year means, because like it's so hard to, you know, differentiate between like who had like a gigantic, you know, like buzzing year and like who made great music and like you could see long-term success. Maybe not so, because they said that their last album will be their next. But I struggled between Brockhampton and Cardi B.
Matt's girlfriend.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope my girlfriend's not listening to this. I don't think she listens to my podcast.
My girlfriend keeps saying she doesn't have headphones at work. I'm like, it's a very convenient excuse.
Yeah, that's great. I ended up going with Cardi B. And I went with Cardi B because, like I said, you can't, like, so Brockhampton had, I think, first off, way more music. Second off, I think that their music in general was better. But, like, in terms of rookie of the year, like, who had the biggest year, I mean, it has to be Cardi B.
Yeah, that's kind of how I looked at it, too. Like, I think I was a little bit split. I thought I was going to go with – I actually – funny enough, before this, I didn't realize how popular Lil Pump and Playboi Carti mm-hmm. were. I knew both of those. I've known songs by them, mm-hmm. but I didn't realize, you know, you were talking hundreds of millions of plays on YouTube and Spotify and shit like that. Mm-hmm. And also, they do have a lot of cultural influence, but – Cardi B, for me, the only reason I'm picking her over Brockhampton is because I think Brockhampton is like a Vince Staples type. You know what I mean?
Sure, absolutely.
Like hip hop heads know who they are, like hipster shit, you know, like the, and they kind of cross over a little bit more into like a pop and rocky kind of sound because of Kevin Abstract. But I think I would just go with Cardi B just based on, I think Money Moves is like the song of the year, arguably.
Yeah.
And I think whatever she puts out next is going to be.
Yeah. She's like, she solidified herself like a spot in like, you know, like just like
cultural lore.
Cultural lore. Yeah. That. And like, I think Brockhampton's a harder group. And like, even like, so we're talking about like looking down the line, I think they're a harder group to project. Because, like, usually with a group like that, like, very similar to an Odd Future, like, I'm sure Kevin Abstract will be a big artist. I don't know how big he will be. But someone like Cardi B has, like, absolutely solidified herself as someone who will stay. And obviously we've been wrong about that. People have been wrong or, like, you know, been misled by that before with someone like Fetty Wap or, you know what I mean? Like, where it's like they have a
human. R.I.P.
Right. I guess he's dead. Like, but someone that had a humongous year and it's like, I haven't heard Fetty Wap and I don't even know.
Joe, how do you feel about Fetty Wap? Do you have an official statement on this?
You know, I think that he might, well, because was this, it was 1738, right? That was the number.
What? Is that the album?
No, they said like the 1738 was the like, that was like their ad lib or whatever.
Yeah, what a bad ad lib.
And so I think that 1738 just kind of fell out of favor, like as numbers. Really is more was his issue. So I think if we ever see a sort of retro 17 or like people get into vintage 38s. we can maybe start hearing about him.
so you would agree, like the number is just a little too big.
Well, like, yeah, I think, I think you know,
four numbers.
Pick one, right?
Like, which one do you think is favorite?
You tell me 17 and 38.
300 and
yeah,
Jake Paul has team 10.
Yeah, that very easy to remember. Yeah.
Chance has the three, you know, and
7-9.
I'm trying to think.
Migos have 17-5.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, I don't know. That's,
So Joe's final analysis on this is that Fetty Wap's downfall was that he picked the number too big.
There's
Yeah, pick 17 or 38. See, they, 17's a prime number, so I that's what I would pick if I were him.
Also, the way they said it, it's like it's two numbers, you know what I mean? Like 17 and 38. It's just, in terms of marketing, it's a fucking disaster.
Oh my God. Yeah, I mean,
holy hell.
Well, it could maybe rebrand because in military time, that's what, like 538? Sort of, yes. Maybe do like a Jimmy Buffett type thing, like as you know, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. I don't know that there's a market for that type
38
thing.
Somewhere, but shorten it.
So like what I'm gathering is Fetty Wap won this category.
Yeah, no, Fetty Wap's
forever.
Fetty Wap's primed himself to be comeback artist next year.
Yeah. So, speaking of irrelevant artists, the next topic we wanted to hop on here is which rapper put out the worst music in 2017, and just a little precursor here. You're gonna like this one, guys, because we've never talked about these artists before. number one, the Macklemore, Roy Moore's cousin Macklemore, released his album Gemini this year. Didn't really do much. Had a Skylar Grey song. Had a song with Lil Yachty. Yeah, I don't know. Did album kind of flopped. Didn't really have any hits like his other ones. And then Nav, who made the album with Metro Boomin and is just Nav. So we had to put him on there. Everyone's favorite, Slim Shady himself, Eminem, who has, by the way, only released two songs and he's on this list. So
unbelievable.
His album doesn't even come out till Friday, and the other song didn't even come out when I made poll.
We already reviewed the album.
He released one song and we're like, I've heard enough.
Yeah, the track list was like the review.
And then lastly was Lil Yachty. Now the reason we put Lil Yachty on there was because we feel like he had a huge drop off in terms of like popularity and quality in his music. We thought his album kind of sucked and didn't have anything that was like fun, like his last shit. So we thought that like that really stood out and was like enjoyable. So we threw him on there, kind of, we tacked him onto the end. We definitely think the other three are objectively worse than him right at the moment.
That's unfair.
I think that it really, with him more, yeah, it was kind of like a letdown as opposed to the pure like badness score, maybe, if that makes sense. Like he dropped off and I majored in English, so I just said badness.
Bad and bouginess.
But yeah, like when I was talking about like Lil Pump being fun, I feel like he filled that space that Yachty kind of occupied last year.
That's a good analysis.
Yeah, that's perfect.
I think that's kind of what we were trying to get at, was like he lost everything that made him appealing, as like Matt said before, Barney on ketamine.
It was weird because like his album was boring. And like he made a name for himself being the exact opposite.
Hey, it's little boat here. Hey, how's it going? Little boat, yeah.
Bill Cosby's grandson. All right.
So like, just a question for both of you: like, what are the odds in 2018 of Macklemore making a song apologizing for his cousin Roy Moore?
I don't think a Macklemore joke will ever top the one that Joe said earlier. I'll never be able to make a joke funnier than that.
Yeah. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks all for coming on our podcast and being funnier than us. Yeah. So which rapper do you think had the worst output in 2017?
It's so tough with our guy on there.
Our boo.
Well, you know, the leader of the resistance. But
wait, were you talking about Macklemore or Eminem? Because they're both resisting hardcore. He was on the Fuck Donald Trump remix, Macklemore.
When you talk about the left being split, we've got like the Macklemore the Macklemore tankies and
the Eminem resistance.
That's sort of the like neo-lib Eminem.
Oh, that is such a deep cut reference. I think four people might get it, but it's incredibly funny for anyone who doesn't understand.
Yes, it's all about becoming increasingly niche references and just all inside jokes. The people like only like you and the hosts know personally. No, but because I do want to make this about the music, and I think just pure terribleness of the music, I have to go with Nav.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I don't think Nav has ever put out a good song. You could argue that Macklemore has put out a better song than Nav.
Yeah, but then that kind of brings you down to like, what's the difference? Like, that's like kind of like creating a fine line between like biggest drop off, or like someone that had like a huge drop off, and someone who had like, you know, worst music of the year. Like, I don't know. I would think that Yachty probably had the biggest like drop off. So like, it makes his lack of relevance in 2017 more glaring. But someone like Eminem, who's so much bigger than the other artists, even more so than, you know, the Mackleman himself, like, he like him making bad music. And I think it's got to the point where like even like his biggest fans are like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, like I'm going.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, I'm jumping ship.
I don't know. Don't ask if I've heard it. I won't respond. You know, yeah.
So is he up for Eminem or Nav or Macklemore or Lil Yachty? Yeah.
You know, all of them would. I think we should probably vote for all of them. No, probably Eminem. Just like he just like, I mean, we've talked about him the most on the podcast for a good reason. Like he's just like, God damn, man. Like really bad.
Yeah.
Not even just bad rap anymore. It's just like embarrassing.
I have a hard time putting anyone over Eminem, but I, to Joe's point, I think Nav is by far the worst musician on. He's literally the worst rapper. He's the worst rapper I've heard that, like, at least you could make the argument with Eminem that, like, and by the way, I think his two songs are fucking terrible. I think they're unlistenable trash. Mm-hmm. But I do think that Nav is just so plain and so fucking boring and so just bleh that, like, at least Eminem has some energy to his music sometimes. Like, I actually think his music is more unlistenable, but I respect the artistical adventures of Macklemore and Eminem over Nav. That's how bad I think Nav is. So I'm
it's like Eminem is like a brutalist architecture, and like Nav is just like terrible like motel art. Like it's like like Eminem stuff is more like physically like grotesque to look at, but you have to respect that there's like some sort of tortured artist in there.
The ambition of Eminem is
Eminem is a tortured artist is a great name.
So yeah, I mean, I think that Nav is like maybe the worst musician I've ever heard in my life. So and I think that his new album is somehow worse than his last, even though Metro Boomin did produce it. I think that is like the saving grace of the album. I think someone put it perfectly when they said that album sounds like if Siri made a rap album.
That's good.
So
Nav is like the hip hop's like mother was like, you have to bring your brother when you go to Metro studio, yeah, and let him record an album.
Mr. Boomin, please hang out with my son. All right, so me and Joe pick Nav for that one. Yeah. Matt and the audience pick Eminem, but the audience gets the tiebreaker. Yeah, so sorry, Joe.
Joe had he made really good points.
Yeah, but little, you know,
the little monologue was great. Eminem's a tortured artist.
It's true. Eminem is, you know, he's a tortured soul.
Brutalist architect.
I really don't even think it's fair to judge that until we hear Eminem's album, but for now, I'm going to go with Nav because we've heard all of Nav's shittiness on that album. So, okay.
At least we didn't look very busted.
All right, we didn't agree on that
one. In
hindsight,
so. I wish we did, but like, you know,
and
my vote stays.
The last topic of the night, Alabama senator, who you got, Roy Moore? Or no. Folks, we're just kidding here, folks. We're going to get back to the discussion at hand. MVP of 2017. So the nominees were based on two different polls that we did. The first poll was Kendrick Lamar, Jay-Z, Drake, and Logic. Kendrick Lamar and Jay-Z came in first and second place of that poll. So we put them through to the finals. And then the other one was Trap Rap Group, which was Future, Migos, Lil Uzi Vert, and 2 Chainz. Now, Future barely squeaked it out over Lil Uzi Vert, so it was Migos, Future, Kendrick Lamar, and Jay-Z in the finals. Mm-hmm. Joe, why don't you take this one?
Yeah, it's tough because there's, I think, as far if you want to go, like, just best hip-hop album and just, like, I don't know. As far as you know, real hip hop heads,
that real shit.
Which, yeah, you know, like just the talking about stuff and things and keeping it real.
The hippity hop.
Yeah,
I think that Migos is who is just they're the poster boys for all those things I just said.
Migos.
No. But yeah, it's sort of a split I'm struggling with, where you got, I think, and the chant, like, face of maybe like commercial popular rap right now, and I think Kendrick probably put together a better cohesive project in year. I would vote Migos, just on my, based on my partial bias. my young Dro influenced
strong.
When I was 15, I was listening to Illmatic by Nas. Joe was listening to Young Dro. So,
oh yeah, you can see
why we would have a little bit of disparity. But here's the thing with the Migos pick: you could argue they had a bigger year than Kendrick.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think Damn the month it came out, I felt like a lot of people were talking about it, and I still hear DNA a decent amount. But as far as like relevancy, Migos, I felt surpassed them in that regard. Like Kendrick had a higher peak, maybe.
Yes.
Is consistency throughout the year, at least in the popular discussion, was higher.
Kendrick also had the name recognition, right? This is something that we constantly talk about on the podcast. When Kendrick, you know, we've talked about just slowly building over the years. Kendrick has been my favorite rapper since 2011. So
yeah,
since then, you've seen him go from being this kind of underground, hipstery, kind of backpacky type, you know, appealing rapper to, you know, now completely appealing to the mainstream and making an album that appeals to the mainstream at his popularity peak.
Yeah, I mean, like, and I think I think like the dynamic between between Migos and then Kendrick is interesting, because I mean, like, Kendrick is one of the very few artists in music that, like, when he releases an album or he releases a single leading up to an album, like, the music world usually stops. And Migos, like, Bad and Bougie, I think, for Joe's argument, like, Bad and Bougie, I don't know what's happening.
It's okay, keep going.
Bad and Bougie continued to gain steam as the year progressed. And even though, like, it hit its peak earlier in the year, I think you probably hear that more than you would hear even like a Humble or a DNA.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you could also argue they had, in addition to that, they had T-shirt was a huge song. They went off and they did their own solo things. What song wasn't Quavo on? What song wasn't, like, Offset was on the Calvin Harris album on that huge hit. Takeoff was on a song. You also have the fact that he made another album. You know, Offset made an album with 21 Savage and Metro Boomin that had two songs that will be hits or are currently hits. So you could really argue that Migos overall as a collective had a bigger year.
And I think that, like, becomes like a three against one thing, is almost like it kind of skews it towards them. But, like, that's just the way three people in a group. And, like, if you look at all three people, they continue to remain relevant.
I try to look at it as a collective, though. Like, I think the music that they released as Migos is what we're stacking up against what Kendrick Lamar put out. I think Future had a great year, too. I think both those albums are good. The Young Thug collab was cool, but he really only had one hit with Mask Off, which once again was produced really by Metro Boomin. Huge song, but the other songs weren't nearly as big as that, whereas I feel like Kendrick and Migos had a few hits. Jay-Z, I mean, we've talked about Jay-Z before. We don't need to continue to. We don't really think that he's deserving to be up there because he's way past his prime, didn't have as much cultural relevance or hit sales with this album because he didn't sell it.
I mean, and if you ask, like, the casual music listener, name one song off of Jay-Z's new album, I would venture to guess that maybe, like, more than half of them would be like, I have no fucking clue.
Right, whereas they would be more likely to name a song off Future, Migos, or Kendrick.
Sure.
So
definitely.
The reason that I think that Kendrick does get the vote still, this is the reason I'm putting Kendrick on top, is because everything I said earlier, I think he's at his peak in terms of cultural relevance. He's at his peak in terms of commercial appeal. and he released a good album. I think it's from best, you know, it's solid. It's not, it doesn't blow me away. I think Culture has really high highs, but there are some songs on there to me that have, that are just kind of forgettable. I think Migos is a really good single and hit group, and they've proven it over and over, and they make great hits. But the only reason I put Kendrick over them is because I think he is the best rapper in the world right now. And I think that he is finally getting the success and credit that he has deserved for years.
And I mean, I, you know, going into the podcast, I agree with you. I haven't like changed my position. It's hard to discern because you have a group like Migos that like, you know, culturally set, you know, the internet on fire for like a prolonged period of time. But like, is that really what we are judging when saying like who was the MVP of 2017? Like there's different variables that go into it, whether it be like, you know, album cohesion, like quantity of the amount of music. And like, I know Kendrick only had one album, but he had features this year. And he also like, just like his album straight through, I think made a bigger impact on the hip hop community than,
Culture. It also sold better than Drake's, which is.
Yeah. So it's really, and I like, and I can hear
that alone.
Yeah. Like that alone. Like, and I, like I said, I hear Joe's argument with Migos too, but like, if you have a bigger year than Drake, and Drake, you know, put out a playlist, like, so, like, I mean, like, God, if you're beating
Drake's not just playlist, an album,
yeah, I mean, like, maybe if Drake put out an album,
next year he's putting out a Snap Story.
Now, to bring it back to what you were saying about like Migos like taking over the internet. Joe, me, and you are always logged in. We're just always online. So,
for better or worse, probably.
If you want to make the argument that Migos own the internet and Migos should win because of that, I think that's a fair argument. I think they're a solid runner-up to Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick was chosen by the fans. He was the fans. We don't have fucking fans. I keep saying it.
No, I'm gonna go to my family's Christmas and just be like, well, it's so great for all my fans to finally get together. Get together and buy me things.
Oh my god. Oh man, I'm really gonna have to rethink my life after this one, Joe.
All right, so like we have never had a guest before. Do you have anything to plug?
I think that's the only people. Do you do that? We have like 75 listeners episode.
Oh yeah, no, I have so many things to plug. Okay, so
fire them off.
All right, December 19th, I'm at Crackers Comedy Club in Broadripple, Indianapolis.
How dare you?
And then also my SoundCloud, check it out. I don't have any original music on there yet, but it's SoundCloud, Julius Irvington. And yeah, I think it's not rap, so sorry, that's probably misleading to mention that on the end of
it's very good electronic music. I'm an electronic snob, and Joe makes really good house and techno, so you should check that out. You probably, if you listen to this podcast, you hang out with me, so you've heard me play it before. But it's actually right?
Servington on Twitter and SoundCloud, and I guess those are the only ones that I want people to know about. So
all right, well, two people that listen to our podcast live in Indiana, so you might be in luck.
Huge. So like I guess the only thing to plug is make sure probably sometime tomorrow to check out Julius Irvington's Twitter page, because we're going to pressure him into retweeting the link for this podcast.
Also, Joe is going to have to send us it, because Joe is the one that recorded it on his half.
Hopefully people get to listen to this.
Yes. Yeah, hopefully we got it.
Yeah, so thanks for being our first guest, Joe, and Roy Moore forever.
Well, thank you for having me.
Peace.
All right, later, guys.
See ya.